And now joining us via phone from Boston is Nikki Boysen, professor of finance at Northeastern University. And for some quick background, I actually came across Nikki on Twitter. So a couple of months ago, she posted a fantastic thread on some of the challenges and opportunities involved with improving financial literacy. Of course, this is a topic near and dear to my heart, so I chimed in on that thread, and there was a conversation among several other people as well. I think for me, just seeing Nikki's enthusiasm and really her balanced take on the topic, I thought she'd be the perfect person to discuss what I think we would all agree is an area that doesn't get near enough attention. Nikki, a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thanks, Nate. I'm really looking forward to digging into this topic.
All right. So you and I visited a little bit yesterday, and we did decide we're not going to tread lightly here. We're just going to jump into the meat of the debate. And, you know, look, I think everyone agrees it's an issue, right? We've all seen the data supporting that. So you and I are going to try to focus on some solutions. I have to start with my biggest grievance, which is we teach art in music, in chemistry, in biology, in all sorts of other courses in our schools. I've got to tell you, so my sixth grade daughter came home a few weeks ago, and I asked her what she learned in school that day. And true story, she said she was learning about donkeys in China. So to begin, why in the world aren't we prioritizing personal finance in our schools?
You know, it is like the age-old question. I was just chatting with my secretary, telling him about this podcast, and they said, we need to teach it in schools. We all agree, right, that the world is financially illiterate, at least Americans are. We're not teaching it properly in school, if at all. And so, yeah, I think there's a long history as to why. I mean, I think in the old days, and this is something I always like to talk about, you used to have a home ec class, right? And you'd learn, I guess ladies would learn how to cook and men would learn how to, I don't know, be men. But the whole point was that you're in there and you'd learn some basics about budgeting and finances and writing checks. And sort of that was a simpler time. And at that point, that might have been sufficient to kind of get you started. You know, you go to the local bank. The banker's not a broker. He's not trying to sort of, you know, to pull one over on you. He's going to hold your loan for 30 years. And you also have your savings account with him. And so to some extent, I think the trust in the financial system made financial literacy a whole lot easier to teach. And I think now it's harder. And we know the numbers, right? Like something like 49% of Americans can't answer basic questions about finance. And that is going to include a lot of the teachers. And so I think the first step in trying to get it into the schools is training the teachers. And that's not a small job.
Well, and right now, only 17 states require a personal finance course to graduate high school. And only 5 states require a semester-long standalone course. That's it. I know there's some research data out there that questions how effective financial education is in schools. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there's actually a really large literature about this. So I was thinking about kind of throwing my hat in the ring in this space, and I started reviewing the literature, and I realized that a lot of the really interesting and good work in the space was being done, and that was encouraging for me. And so there's kind of two things that I want to highlight, and as you might expect, there's pros and cons, but historically, you know, since financial education started in schools, some economists and finance people have been doing research in the space, and the punchline of kind of the older papers is that it just didn't work. Whether it's mandated or not, students seem to not do well on tests, and they followed some of them forward, and they weren't appearing to make, you know, substantially better financial decisions. And that was really discouraging to me. I talked to a couple people who'd done work in the space, and they all felt the same way. You know, they said, I went in hoping to find that it worked, and I just kind of found that it didn't. And so that was, you know, that's pretty telling. But I guess the good news is that there is some recent work that is showing a glimmer of hope. So I'll give a shout-out to Carly Urban, who is my Twitter friend. We don't know each other in person, but she's over in Montana, University of Montana or Montana State, and she's doing tremendous work in this space. And so she's done some really careful econometric analyses, and she's finding some evidence that the mandatory courses are working. And she, I won't go into her research design into too much detail, but she does a really good job at trying to tease out causality. She finds some evidence that high school classes are associated with fewer defaults and higher credit scores among young adults. She also finds that it frequently, these high school literacy classes, and this is with her co-author's daughter, find that there's some shift from for students from high cost to low cost loan financing. The requirements increase aid applications, which I can't even tell you how overjoyed I am about that. So one of the big problems in the financial sort of literacy space is that students in college and their parents don't even know how to go after getting financial aid for college. And so just sort of telling them, yes, you can get financial aid for college, here's how to do it, has turned out to make, you know, a reasonably good difference. So while the prior state is sort of dismal and the forcing the financial education just wasn't seeming to work, it does seem to, you know, maybe have started working. At least the recent studies sort of indicate that. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah, and one of the things I think we should mention about the research data, just as I think critically to some of the studies that are out there, I think personal finance should be integrated into the curriculum starting at a very early age. I would say even elementary school. And of course, the data on whether financial education works is typically based on a single course in high school. So given that, I just wonder how much those academic studies can really tell us, you know, on the efficacy of that education. You know, I think we would all agree a single course in high school probably isn't going to move the needle as much as we would like. So I just think that's important to point out. You know, another pushback that's out there against financial education in schools is that people will forget what they learned. But, you know, can't we say the same thing about chemistry or biology or art? I guess I just don't buy that as an argument, unless people who support that line of thinking are also supportive of dropping any subject we teach that people may forget later on. Do you agree with that?
You know, I think it's a really interesting kind of circular reasoning. So I do think it's true that not everyone could recite the periodic table. And I also think it's true that some people kind of cliff noted their way through their literature classes. I don't think it's an excuse not to teach it. I do think, though, it's a really important sort of, it's true, people forget stuff. So to some extent, if anything, knowing that, it really speaks to proper design of these courses, proper teacher training, as you say, integrating it earlier. And so people will forget stuff, there's no doubt. But if it's taught properly throughout and sort of, you know, reinforced frequently. I mean, most people can do addition. A lot of people struggle with kind of compound interest maybe, but, you know, somehow addition made it through. So perhaps maybe financial literacy can make it through as well.
Okay, so all that said, I think we both agree financial education isn't the full solution here, right? So our kids are all required to take physical education, and we have a significant obesity problem in this country. And so there's no question behavior comes into play here. We all know we should exercise more and eat right and not smoke. But of course, not everyone does those things. And I actually think, you know, I think many people do understand at least the very basics of good financial behavior. In other words, I think if you ask just about anyone, they will tell you they understand they need to save for retirement or spend less than they make. The challenge is actually doing it.
For sure.
Can you talk a little bit about the role of behavior here?
Yeah, I think it cannot possibly be understated. And I always think about Richard Thaler and, you know, winning the Nobel Prize effectively for what's a really simple idea. People are inherently lazy, right? So we have entropy. It's harder to move than it is not to move. And so if you auto-enroll me into a 401k and put me in some reasonable balanced TDF or whatever, I'm pretty lazy. I'm probably not going to go change that. Now, maybe I could go and change the allocation if I was so motivated, but most likely opting out is something that is just as hard as opting in the first place. And so his work is really, really sort of earth-breaking. I mean, you know, we all as academics hope that something that we do can change the world so much. And, you know, now when auto-enrollment is there, people stay in. And then suddenly 5 years later, they look and they're like, look, I've saved some money and I didn't even really notice it. So there's a huge, huge, huge for kind of this opt-in. You want to be careful, right? We don't want to be in a situation where we're forcing people to do things in a free country. But with respect to the 401k enrollment, makes perfect sense. And so thinking about other behavioral type explanations and behavioral type approaches is important, but we know it's hard, right? Especially as you're moving up the ladder, you live in a more affluent town, you look over and your neighbor has a nicer car, and people just really think hard about kind of the present and not the future. So my neighbor has a BMW, like, maybe I want one. And even if I can't really afford one, or even if I'd be better off socking that money away, boy, it's tempting, right?
Well, something else that's interesting to me is, and I wrote about this last week, people will talk about their diets, right? If somebody's on the keto diet, or they'll talk about their exercise regimen, you know, deadlifting, everything else, they're more than happy to share that stuff publicly. But when it comes to personal finances, nobody wants to talk about it, right? It's taboo to talk about your salary, to talk retirement savings. I just find it interesting that personal finance is such a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about it.
No, and it's this weird, like, emotional insecurity about money, or maybe you grew up in a house where your parents were like, you know, we, in polite company, you don't talk about money. And sure, like, no one wants to go to a dinner party where everyone's wearing their salaries on their sleeves and talking about their latest bonus, but there is some middle ground with respect to this conversation, and I agree. And so money becomes this weird, mysterious way to measure yourself, and then people who are already kind of emotionally distressed about thinking about it or talking about it, then it just all seems really hard, right? You start talking about 401k plan or an IRA, or you start talking about mutual funds or ETFs or whatever it is, and their eyes just glaze over and they look like they're going to cry. I mean, I see that happen in my classes sometimes, and that's never great. But I mean, you know, not, and it doesn't have to be that way, but I do think there's this weird taboo. I mean, I'm quite tired of hearing about somebody's macrobiotic diet. I'd much rather listen to them talking about their, you know, like, here's what I learned about savings. And it can be exhausting as well on the other side, but I agree with you. And I don't know why, but I suspect a lot of it just comes from, you know, this is just the way that we were raised, and people don't really talk about money.
All right, so we have just a couple of minutes left. We're obviously not going to solve the world's problems today.
Sure.
But I am interested. Do you have any extremely strong views on proposed solutions that might help? You mentioned something like the auto opt-in on 401ks, but are there other things that you think we should be focusing on?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm of two minds. I mean, I think you have to hit this from several fronts, and here are all the fronts that I will just rattle off for you. I mean, I think for sure you need to start this earlier, and you can make it fun, right? You start with kids, you play games, you learn about money, and my kids do have the occasional math problem that looks, you know, financial literacy, and that's good. But it needs to be more integrated. It needs to be stronger based in the curriculum. And, you know, I can't speak to required or not required, but it needs to be there a lot more than it's there. I think the second thing, there's something to this kind of just-in-time approach. And I don't know the answer to this, but as I sit and think a bit about it, it seems that, you know, I learn about, well, I guess there's three things. So let me go to the middle one. The middle one is, what do you choose to teach? How basic are you going to make it? How complicated are you going to make it? Do I need to show an amortization table to a 15-year-old and he's not going to have a mortgage for 30 years, 20 years, whatever it is? I'm not sure if that's the way to go. So I think that the design and the training cannot be underestimated. And if it's done wrong, all the good intentions will go for naught. And then I guess the third thing is, it would be really cool if there were some kind of independent person who could help people at those just-in-time life decisions. I need a mortgage. I need a car. I'm doing some estate planning. Estate planning, no problem. A lawyer will probably help you with that. You got to pay him. But some of these other decisions that people think they can do themselves, they might not be able to. And so I don't know the answer, but it seems that if you could find some way to help people just at those crucial time frames, it can make a massive difference long term.
Well, Nikki, we're going to have to leave it there. Not nearly enough time to cover this topic.
No, definitely flew by.
Yeah, really appreciate your perspective. I think we're definitely going to have you back on to cover this. Thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for inviting me.
That was Nikki Boysen, professor of finance at Northeastern University. And by the way, I highly recommend following her on Twitter. Her handle is @NIKIR1.